The following is not for broadcast. Attention, engineer. There is no spot announcement for this program. Program begins 10 seconds after this announcement.
Your name, please?
My name is Arthur Ben Chitty.
And your occupation and position?
Well, I'm in education. I'm president of the Association of Episcopal Colleges.
Mr. Chitty, is it possible for a person to read a story of a life such as Ely's life, which was that of a person part black, part white, and remain unchanged in his opinions about the racial situation?
My viewpoint is, reading Ely, it is impossible not to be profoundly moved and profoundly changed. There is so much new in it, there's so much different in it. There are so many points of view that you have not considered before. It certainly did have a profound effect on me.
This is Viewpoint, a series of unrehearsed and personal interviews with people from all walks of life, produced by the Episcopal Church and brought to you as a news and public affairs program of this station. Today's guest is Arthur Ben Chitty, president of the Association of Episcopal Colleges, and co-editor of the recently published book, Ely, Too Black, Too White. Here is the moderator of the award-winning series, Viewpoint, the Reverend Dana F. Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy.
Welcome to Viewpoint, Mr. Arthur Ben Chitty. Mr. Chitty, I know that very recently you've written a very interesting book on a man who was both black and part white of a past generation. His name was Ely. How did you happen to get involved with that project?
It happened in a strange way, and incidentally, I didn't really write the book. Ely wrote the book. I had the pleasure of writing the introduction and of editing it with my wife. The manuscript came into my hands in this way. Ely Green brought it to my home in Sewanee, Tennessee, where he had been born and where I was then the historiographer of the university. And he hearing that I was interested in background at Sewanee, simply walked in and said, "Would you like to see my memories of Sewanee?" I said, "Indeed I would." And so the next day he brought me a suitcase full of sheets of paper, loose leaf paper, on which he had written 1,200 pages of closely written script.
And briefly, in sort of a skeleton way, what was the story of his life? What had he done? Where had he been?
Oh, he was born in Sewanee, which is a little university community, an Episcopal-oriented place. And his father had been a student there, and his mother was a servant girl who worked for one of the families there. She was 16. And the father was perhaps 19 at that time. Ely grew up in this little community. He stayed there till he was 18 years old. He was a sort of campus pet or favorite. He did everything as he grew up. He would shine shoes and carry coal scuttles up to the third floor in the theological seminary and so on. But he increasingly became bitter about the way in which he was treated because of his color. And he finally left Sewanee and headed for Texas, where he had some relatives. He then stayed in Texas from 1911 until World War I, and then in 1918, just the last part of the war, he went over to France and served there in a stevedoring unit. He came back and was in Texas for a while longer, but again, he ran in with the law, as it were, and finally was run out of Waxahachie, where he had settled and was working as a butler and chauffeur for Judge Dunlap. Then he went to the oil fields, and here's where we got the title of the story. He said that he applied for a place to work in the oil fields, and they said, "No, you can't work in the oil fields because you're black, you're a Negro, we can't hire any blacks." He was too black to work in the oil fields, so then he decided he would apply for a job with the Pullman Company. And if he couldn't have wealth, he would have security. They wouldn't hire him because his skin was too light. They wanted dark Negroes. He was too black for the oil fields, too white for the Pullman Company. He went on from the oil fields out to California and spent the rest of his life there as a butler and caterer. For three or four years, he traveled on, he went around on yachts as a chef on private yachts. Then he settled in at Beverly Hills and spent the rest of his life there.
And what's so timely about this story?
I think the story offers a peaceful solution to perhaps the most pressing problem of our time in this country. Although Ely continued to press for justice, he also continued to love those who persecuted him. It's a great revelation of charity, I think, this book is.
And does it help a person to understand any better the implications that go along with racism and the whole confrontation?
Yes, yes, indeed it does. It opens up aspects of the subconscious persecution of white toward the black, which I had never even remotely suspected.
Well, now you yourself were born and raised in the South.
Oh, yes, I'm from the South, and I thought, as so many Southerners do, that I just understood this whole picture perfectly, but I didn't at all.
What do you think within this story, which you found with Ely, was the most important question that he had to answer, and how did he answer it?
Well, he shows how being black is a hazard to life and limb. He makes this interesting comment. He said, though he was very light in color and could pass for white, he says at one place, I never tried to pass as white except to save my life. You see, here would be a situation in which he was confronted by police, for instance, and he could, and by passing as white, which he could do by keeping his hat on, actually, he would escape the normal brutality which would have confronted him had he been a Negro.
Going back in Ely's younger life, when did he first become aware that he had that he was different, that he had a problem?
Oh, that's a dramatic little moment. He was raking leaves in the yard of the chaplain, William Alexander Gary, and Mrs. Gary had offered them 15 cents apiece if he and her two sons, Alexander Gary, who later became president of the university, and his brother. Taking their 15 cents apiece, they went to the drugstore, and the three boys ordered from the soda fountain three milkshakes. They called them actually egg flips. And the soda jerk, who was of course white, put two egg flips on the counter. And when Alexander Gary said, "We ordered three, we want one for our friend Ely here," and the soda jerk said, "There's not enough money in the world to pay me to make a milkshake for a nigger." And with that, Alexander Gary pushed the two milkshakes over the counter, splashing them on the man, and they all three ran out. And when they got back to Mrs. Gary's, Ely Green said to her, "Mother Gary, what is a Negro? What does this mean? Why is it that because I am a Negro, I can't have a milkshake at the soda fountain?" And that was a tough question for her. She thought a minute, and she said, "Well, I'm going to fix you some hot chocolate, but this is a question that I think you ought to discuss with Father Gary, the chaplain." So there began Ely's exploration of himself. He was 9 years old then. And Chaplain Gary was helpful to him, but particularly helpful was another clergyman who was retired and living there, Father Easton.
Well, now, what sort of answers? First of all, about when would this have been?
This is about 1900.
And what kind of answers would they give him? How would they try to explain this?
Well, they went into the black history, the history of the slave trade, the history of the Southern plantation owners employing slaves. They went into they gave the classical Southern position on the slave. They referred, made some biblical references to slavery, of course. These two men were very, very sympathetic to Ely, by the way, and he loved them dearly as long as he lived. But all they did really was try to make sense to him. They tried to tell him the way it was.
Now, is there any question in your mind at all about the veracity of this book?
Well, there isn't in my mind at all, though it's a legitimate question for anyone to ask. And here's why. Of this 650 pages, some 200 of them are set in Sewanee and concern Sewanee people and places. Well, I really, as the historian of the university, and I know more about Sewanee than I guess most anyone else, and I have meticulously checked every Sewanee reference. There are 94 people that he mentions in connection with Sewanee, I either know them themselves or know their children or know something about them. So it would not make sense to me that he would have been perfectly, scrupulously accurate in the first part and then departed from it. I know the first part is absolutely accurate.
In relationship to your whole experience of writing this book and thinking so strongly with Ely, what do you find to be the basic tragedy of his life?
Well, I think the tragedy is the depicting here of a superior man who is constricted by, who's hamstrung by an imperfect society. Bad laws and illogical customs. This is the basic tragedy.
What is a basic triumph, if there be any?
Oh, the basic triumph, I think, was perhaps best expressed by theologian Fitzsimmons Allison, who said, Ely's is a story of injustice, grace, suffering, anger, pride, community, but above all, a victory over the need to hate. That's an interesting phrase, I thought.
The book is a
victory over the need to hate.
Do you think that not just the book, but the story of a life written so poignantly as Ely's written it, is of any help to people that are involved in the race struggle of today, or the progress that's trying to be made in relationships between people?
Well, it certainly is helpful to the extent that it shows the subtleties of the persecution, which, as I say, the average white individual simply doesn't perceive. In that way, it is extremely helpful. But of course, as I say, the most help I believe it gives is its insistence on love, forgiveness, charity.
As you yourself look ahead to the future, do you have hope that these problems that we're facing now will be resolved in a way that will be beneficial to everybody, or do you think that we're up against an impossible thing?
Oh, I don't think it's impossible at all. I do believe that we will be able to solve these problems, but I do believe that it will have to be in the very framework that Ely refers to, namely in a framework of love and charity.
Thank you very much, Mr. Arthur Ben-Chitty, for being with us and for giving us your viewpoint.
This has been Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview produced by the Division of Radio and Television of the Episcopal Church and presented in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and the Council of Churches of the City of New York as a news and public affairs program of this station. Today's guest was Arthur Ben-Chitty, President of the Association of Episcopal Colleges and co-editor of the recently published book, Ely, Too Black, Too White.